This episode may contain explicit language and themes such as sexual assault and violence. Listener discretion is advised.
Every cent of the Hillsong Empire, every cent of their salaries, their cars, their clothes, their mansions, their airfares, their accommodation, their holidays, every cent has been given to them by the sheep.
I'm Dan Johnstone, and this is Hillsong, a megachurch shattered from Discovery Plus. In the months after Brian's resignation, the documentary's premiere, and the leaked Lentz report, I began hearing from more people through email, Twitter, and Instagram who were reaching out to share their own troubling experiences with Hillsong. Whistleblowers were coming forward with powerful stories to tell. The walls of silence lining Hillsong were filling with voices of its victims. My conversations with some of those now speaking up takes me to where Hillsong's controversy began over 30 years ago, and where it now continues to deepen. Australia. Jeff Bullock was a founding figure of Hills Christian Life Centre in the early 1980s, and stood at Brian Houston's side as he built his vision for Hillsong. Jeff wrote their first global mega hit, Power of Your Love, as Hillsong's first ever worship pastor, a position he now refers to as Chief Propaganda Officer. But Jeff abruptly left the church in 1995 and never shared the real reason why. Now, after a 27-year silence, Jeff is coming forward to share his story and the truth about the beginning days of Hillsong. Hey, Jeff, I'm Dan.
Hi, Dan. How are you going?
I've really wanted to speak to somebody, you know, like yourself that has this kind of history, and I'd known your name. Sort of just to start off, at the beginning, when you found that message and that belief, and you wrote that music, it must have felt exciting at that time.
Oh, it was extraordinary because we were young, we were all in our late 20s, and we started to play a more upbeat type of music, and we were very much into the gifts of the Holy Spirit and the sense of, you know, the anointing and all those Pentecostal words. And then all of a sudden, the church started to grow. And so by late 84, I suggested to Brian that we call the music group Hillsong because the Hills Christian Life Center music group sort of sounded clunky. And he goes, oh, okay, I don't know why. Then we moved into a warehouse in 85. And then 87, I went full time. And then we pulled the wall down, doubled the size of it. And then we started the Hillsong Conference, which I ran, convened at least, for 9 years. Fast forward to 95, when they recorded Shout to the Lord. Shout to the Lord went double gold in America. All the albums, all the live albums that we recorded had gone gold and platinum all over the world. And that was 12 years after we started a little satellite church. In 12 years, and then look, over the last 27 years since I've gone, it's taken the world.
Right.
The opportunity that we missed is we didn't really have an encounter with Jesus. We had an encounter with the Holy Spirit, and we had an encounter with popularity, and we had an encounter with something that, oh, it's going to sound awful, but we could sell. The church became the object. The church became far more important than what we were, who we were meant to be emulating. I suddenly had the problem was that my spirituality was changing, and I was finding that the methodology of leadership and the character of leadership that I had to enforce was suddenly becoming an anathema to me, that I suddenly couldn't be that person anymore. I was going in a different direction.
Jeff left the church in 1995 after giving 12 years to Brian. The reasons he gave are all personal. He didn't attack the church. He didn't publicly question Brian's leadership. And yet, even in those days, leaving Hillsong was just not something you did peacefully.
When I left Hillsong in, well, it was Hills Christian Life Center in those days, but in late 1995, from that moment on, it was sort of like they tried to move as far away from me as they possibly could, or move me as far away from them as they possibly could. And actively, worked against my ministry at the time, and I lost contact with all my colleagues, and three or four times tried to reconcile with Brian. It appeared that if I said anything, I would get quite a aggressive response, and so I remained relatively silent about the real reasons of leaving and the process of leaving and then what happened over the following 25, 26 years.
Right. One thing that struck me about something that you said, I mean, you said you tried to reach out to Brian, not for the church side of it, just to sort of some sort of reconciliation.
Well, for his sake, you know, I was trying, we were very, very close friends. We went on holidays together. There's one stage we were thinking of buying a couple of acreage that my parents were trying to sell, and we were going to build two houses together, which would have been interesting.
I'm guessing that he couldn't accept what you were trying to reconcile with him.
I remember we took Brian and Bobby to lunch on, you're not going to believe this, August the 13th, 1997. And I tried to explain to him, I said, look, Brian, I'm so sorry. I'm not sorry for what I did because I had to, but I'm sorry for what you and Bobby went through. And he just said to me, I will believe that when you're back in my church. So to Brian, it was, he took it personally that he'd lost an armor bearer and that I was absolutely wrong and deluded. And he really couldn't countenance my reasons. Well, one, because I probably wasn't being particularly honest about them. At the time, I just said I really felt that God was demanding that I go, which in essence is what I felt at the time. It took me a long time to come to realize why I left and also come to realize the dysfunction in the church and the abuse of our workers that I was part of.
You epitomize what a lot of people tell me that they fear. And that is, this is a community and a family and a group that I belong to. And speaking up against it, I'd lose that community. Mm. You're excommunicated from it. And it's not that you necessarily miss the church or the teaching. It's that you miss the people. And I feel like you very specifically were removed from those people.
I lost all my friends. I lost all my buddies. When I left Hillsong in 1995, I continued in ministry. And so I was about to fly out to Perth only a few days later. And Navi Sali and Lee Howard Smith, who are two elders of Hillsong, said, look, can we meet you in the business lounge or in a business room at Sydney Airport? We want to talk to you.
Navi Sala, the man Jeff references here, is still a Hillsong Global board member to this day. Navi went on to have a controversial career of his own that we will discuss later in the series.
And so we met there and they said, look, please don't leave. Please don't leave. I felt profoundly that I had to leave. And at the time, I really felt that it was God calling me to leave. And so that wouldn't change my mind. And so obviously I went my own way. The next time I saw Navi Sali, he looked at me and he said to me, Jeff, you do know we tried to destroy you. And that's verbatim.
Wow.
And I looked at him and I said, Navi, why? Verbatim. Now, the next thing I don't remember, but it was along the lines of, well, Jeff, we thought you were going to bring us down. So these problems and this methodology that they've used, it was actually acknowledged by them way back in the mid-90s.
Navi Sali has not responded to other news outlets' requests for comment about these allegations. I didn't say this originally, but I do appreciate you sharing this story with me and with us, and I appreciate you sharing it with others. I think the point of it getting out there is important. Why now? Why is your part of the story? What is it about now?
When Brian resigned from the church, I felt that I had permission to see that there were now two separate entities. There was Brian, and then there was my story at Hillsong. And to be honest, the other reason was that I finally found the courage to do it. But I just felt that my story could be heard and told without people thinking there was a horrid underlying bias to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it seems to be that's the first point of attack is you know, someone's agenda. I mean, I've certainly, I don't have an iota of the connection that you do to it, but I have been, that charge has been levied against me. Yeah, and this is the unwavering nature now is just attack any messenger that says anything about the shepherd.
What's happened now is it's reversed, where the sheep are protecting the shepherd. And it's just important to say that for me, this is not about just about Brian and Hillsong. For me, this is about a culture of Christianity.
Right. I'm very interested in the political nature of how Brian has dealt with a lot of things. He treats direct questions like a politician. Mm. And he always says that he doesn't know about anything until the last minute. He didn't know about Carl until I just found out. I didn't know about my father until these guys brought it up to me. Mm. But I think from your personal understanding, is there are some incidents in the past that Brian did know about and has sort of tried to either remove himself from or just kind of deny?
It's a hard thing to tell, but it probably needs to be stated again that Brian would often call me into his office and we would discuss things, you know, things that were perhaps a threat to the church or something. He was he'd run things by me a lot because I was a mate.
Right.
And one morning, Brian called me into the office and just said, this young man that I knew, who was a very, very close friend of mine, has made allegations that my father was interfering with him. And this young man made an accusation to his senior pastor. And that senior pastor was the senior pastor of the church that Frank used to pastor, Christian Life Center Sydney. And he made an accusation to this pastor that Frank was basically using gay conversion therapy in a way that was really sexual abuse. Now, this young man was in his 20s, so this was not a criminal act, but it was a warning about Brian's father, Frank. And I remember the discussion of, well, what have you done? And he said, well, we've told his wife and she's left him and he's run off to Queensland. And so that's how they dealt with it.
Right.
They basically removed the whistleblower.
Right. Brian Houston denies ever learning of this accusation made against his father.
But the problem is that the concept of the kingdom, the church building a kingdom, the concept is that anything that comes against that kingdom has to be dealt with very, very quickly. It has to be, the best way to deal with it is to banish the messenger or the whistleblower. Because we were protecting the kingdom, that we had to protect the kingdom and the church at all costs. Now, in those days, it made perfect sense to me. And I, to my discredit, I felt relief. Oh, okay, phew. Okay, it's fine.
And the whistleblower, to use their phrase, you know, taking off to Queensland, allowed it to not be addressed.
That's right. Yes. He was the creative arts minister of Christian Life Center Sydney. He had a family with children. And suddenly he's been outed.
Right.
And he had to build his life, just start again. It's heartbreaking. But unfortunately, that story is mirrored time and time and time again. And sadly, when the story came out in 1999, it didn't become addressed by the AOG to 2004. And that's the problem we now have before the court.
The problem we now have before the court, as Jeff describes it, is the charge against Brian Houston for failing to report his father Frank's child sexual abuse to authorities. When he first claims to have learned about it in 1999, in Brian's own statement to the Australian Royal Commission, he says, quote, "This was the first allegation of child sexual abuse. or any other allegation of this type against Frank that I had ever been aware of." End quote. He expresses shock in learning of his father's sexual deviance. But according to Jeff, Brian was told about this allegation over 4 years before the allegation being litigated in Australia now. There is something in watching the commission, the Royal Commission. Mm-hmm. There's something that I sort of want to touch on, and that you you talked about the sexual deviance of Frank and the red flags about it. One of the things that Brian says when he is confronted with the first time he heard about his father and Brett's sing stop.
Now, the reason I remember is because it hit me, you know, in a 10-second period, in a wave, because I was, like, homosexual, you know, getting my head around that before my consciousness went to, hold it a minute, we're not just talking about, you know, homosexual, we're talking about paedophilia.
The first thing he says is, wow, I was shocked, and the first thing I thought was, whoa, homosexual, and then I walked into the crime. And I want to make a really hard point of separation that homosexuality is not the deviance. The deviance is the abuse and pedophilia.
Oh, absolutely.
Homosexuality is not a sin. It is not a deviance. It is not a crime. It is a natural part of our human condition. And the fact that that was his first thought, and he says it on the stand. I'm not putting words in his mouth at this point, because I feel like, within Hillsong, even the fact that that was his first thought about an alleged abuse against a child, and I really feel a strong urge to remove that, even that word or connotation to do with what is the most evil crime.
Well, Dan, it's what if it wasn't Brett Sinstock? What if it was Brianna? And Frank's sexual deviancy was towards underage girl. Would that sort of be less horrifying,
right,
to that moral structure of the church?
Yeah, it's a chilling, chilling thought, and I haven't thought about it like that. There's no space in that.
Yeah,
in that. I'm stumbling over my words because I'm finding it very difficult to talk about.
Mm. No, that is a reflection of that patriarchal male Christianity that is a poison arrow into the hearts of young men and women who are suffering where their sexual identity that is being pushed by a church that says that we're all created in the image of God, which. Sort that one out for me theologically.
Right.
We're all created in the image of God, except that part of your image isn't godly.
Yeah, I'm still sort of stuck on that question, because it so perfectly personifies it. If it was a girl, would it make it any different? And as if there's a gradation of sin that his father committed. And one of those things, it's really chilling to think about.
It is chilling. And it's even more chilling when that comes from one of the most senior religious leaders in the world.
Brian categorically denies learning of any allegations of sexual abuse by his father until 1999. But Jeff says Brian knew of homosexual allegations against his father in the mid-90s, allegations that required his personal intervention. And as we've seen time and time again, only this time in a royal court, Brian seems to be toying with the truth.
Now, I really need to be careful here that I'm not making accusations. So I'm not I do not have an agenda. I'm heartbroken. I'm heartbroken for Brian and Bobby. I'm heartbroken for his family. I'm heartbroken for the victims. But if we feel that to defend the church is to cover the truth, then the truth will never set us free. If we know the truth and we speak the truth, then we set ourselves free. And that takes grace. And I'm not saying I'm courageous, but it takes courage to look at the truth about yourself and go, I was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. My hand up. Yep.
Right.
I was wrong. I can't blame anybody else. That was my decision. And right. I made other people the victim. But this, unfortunately, is why this has all happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's the cover-up that catches you. And, you know, now he is out of the church, and he seems to be incredibly angry, incredibly self-righteous, and has a point to prove.
Mm.
He's supposed to be taking a step back from ministry.
Yes.
And instead, he is on a nation tour every Sunday at a new church, you know.
Yes, he's on the victim justification tour.
Right.
Poor man. If he could only reflect on who he's become and have the courage to see that his failure was assured because of that people justified his personality, made excuses for it. He wasn't accountable for it. And it's just sad to see where he is now. You know, it sort of breaks my heart because, you know, I've known Brian since he was in his mid-20s.
Right. Yeah, you should have a lot of shared time together.
Definitely.
A very transformative moments in your life.
I can still remember Brian's eyes. Clearly, I can close my eyes and see Brian's eyes. And I can still remember my deep love for the man to the point where I was prepared to do things that were against my conscience because I thought it was the right thing to do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there's a clip of Brian that gets shared a lot, which is, you know, do you think Hillsong's got too big? And he says, I don't think a church can be too big. And I feel like it's a flippant statement because when something gets that big, people do get forgotten. Messages get forgotten. The axiomatic reasoning of like, well, we're getting bigger, so we can't be wrong because Jesus wouldn't let us get bigger. So we get bigger again. You know, it's like this self-serving reasoning.
I'll leave you with one thought that every cent of the Hillsong empire, every cent of their salaries, their cars, their clothes, their mansions, their airfares, their accommodation, their holidays, every cent has been given to them by the sheep. Brian Houston's house is on the market here in Sydney. Multi-million dollar house. I don't know what it's going for. It'd have to be north of $3 million. Pictures of a walk-in wardrobe full of designer clothes, a pool, a garden, a mansion. Every cent of that house was charity to Brian and Bobby. If their theology was right, Hillsong would be a congregation of millionaires, but it's not. It's just pastored by millionaires.
Yeah.
And the millionaires, because people feel compelled to give to God in purity of heart. And that's a hard one, and to wake up from that is a horrible thought for people who have sacrificed financially for decades. I need to realize that it's gone to the first class seats and the resorts and the designer clothes and the mansions. Did it go to God? Well, how can it go to God? The only way we can give to God is put our arm around somebody and give them grace and peace.
Some defenders of Hillsong justify their recent scandals, the exposed abuse and their strategies of cover-up, as growing pains. That these things will happen as an institution is learning how to manage and protect something that has become so expensive, powerful, and wealthy so fast. But Jeff's account from the beginning days of 30 years ago seemed to mirror the modern-day Hillsong abuse, coercion, cover-up, all in the name of building the kingdom. And that kingdom, according to yet another new whistleblower out of Australia, Jacob Harrison, is more expansive, more shadowy than I ever knew. Jacob was a patient at a rehab outside Sydney called 180TC. While the rehab isn't officially linked to Hillsong, their ties run deep. Hillsong elder Andrew Denton is a 180TC board member. Its general manager is the brother of current Hillsong board member Darren Keto. And in 2019, 180TC was given a three-year, $1.8 million contract with the Australian government that former Prime Minister and alleged buddy of Brian Houston, Scott Morrison, inked just weeks before the 2019 election he was expected to lose. Start from the beginning.
Okay.
How did you? How did you come to be?
Where did I come from? Basically, I've had my own mental health misadventures over the years. I had a lot of PTSD. Started drinking a lot. I've got bipolar type 2. I was starting to check into psych wards fairly regularly with suicidal ideation to the point where I couldn't hold down a job, where I was getting on the brink of homelessness. I had no idea what my next step was because I was kind of out of options. I needed something if I right. wanted to live. And I was pretty much ready to reach out for whatever help there was. Whatever hand was offered, I was willing to take. So I was in a psych ward in Sydney, early 2018.
Right.
So there was another patient there. And he said 10 years ago, he was in a place called 180TC. And he got a lot of help in there. And quite a number of years before, obviously, he also landed in a psych ward. But, you know, I wasn't in a good enough state to really put that logical step.
Put that together.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you don't always get the best advice from other patients in the psych ward, as it turns out.
You're looking for any kind of lifeline.
Yeah.
You're ready to reach out and try anything. But until this point, you don't know anything.
Never heard of the place.
You have no idea about any religious connotation or anything like that.
I knew that at that stage they were a Christian-based rehab. But in Australia, well, there are basically no rehabs. We kind of outsource to whoever will take any long-term patients. That's kind of the way it works over here.
So it's not unusual that it would be associated with a Christian group of some kind.
No, not of some kind. And I was thinking, you know, it could be Salvation Army.
Right,
they've kind of been around for quite a few years and known to do quite good work operating in safe injection rooms and things like that. And at that point, I had no other leads. So I'm like, you know what? I think I'll take this. So that was it. I checked out of the psych ward into my mum's care. She was going to drive me to this rehab on the outskirts of Western Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And we joked on the way there, like, you know, about the Christian side of it. And she's so how are you going to handle having to go to church every day? I mean, every Sunday or whatever it is. And I'm like, oh, you know, it'll be fine. I mean, like, it's not going to be Hillsong, is it?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and we both laughed. We both had a good laugh.
So you were aware of the entity of Hillsong.
Oh yeah, we made big jokes about it. Oh yeah, and to be honest, it's a weird thing to have come from Australia. Like I remember my first experience of walking into a Hillsong church. It was similar to my first experience of walking into an Outback steakhouse in America. It was just like, this shouldn't be here. Where am I? This seems out of place.
You're officially the only person that's ever described a Hillsong service as an Outback steakhouse or a similar experience too. So I'm just going to leave that one there.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get back to where I was in my story.
Yeah, yeah. You're with your mom. You're joking that at least it's not going to be a Hillsong.
Yeah.
Pull me into the parking lot. Like,
oh,
you're
okay.
with your mom.
So,
you have a
yeah,
laugh.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Okay, so we've got it punched into Google Maps. We're going out. You know, it's getting more and more kind of out the back of rural Western Sydney and out into the bush, basically. And it's turned into a dirt road. And we're going over this dirt road, over this bridge, up a hill. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, is this Jonestown? We made it up the hill and it's just some shacks. It's just it looks like a summer camp, but really quite run down at the time.
Just really remote.
It's out there.
Right.
In the bush. We drove up to the main shack. That's where I did my kind of, you know, orientation. They searched my bags and whatever. And my mum at that stage, she's still with me. She's like, oh, I was just wondering, so what church do you guys go to? And so we go to Hillsong two or three times a week. And mum looked at me and I looked at her and we're both trying not to laugh. And she's like, oh, that's nice. So, yeah, we did the initial orientation. We were checking in. They were going through my bags, making sure I didn't have anything I wasn't supposed to, which includes, as it turns out, any kind of literature that isn't either a Bible or Pentecostal literature. Like, you know, if you had a copy of Lord of the Rings in there, that shouldn't be something that they would confiscate. The only things that weren't Bibles, like that they had in their library, were things that were passed down from Hillsong College that they didn't use anymore. Like stuff that you wouldn't really necessarily want vulnerable people reading, especially when it's the only thing that's on offer.
What was the actual treatment like?
The first 6 weeks is structured like a normal rehab. However, it's a 12-month program. So it's a long-term kind of, you're in there for a big commitment.
Right.
The way that you're paying for this generally is you have to be on a government welfare payment, either unemployment or a student allowance or a disability pension.
Right.
That said, there were people in there that were conned into selling their homes. Same kind of tactics that you'd be familiar with talking to people from Hillsong.
To clarify, when Jacob says conned into selling their homes, he's referencing a story that he heard from a friend in the rehab that another patient sold his house and gave the proceeds to 1ATTC. We haven't been able to substantiate this claim, but regardless, it seems that 1ATTC's patients, similar to many Hillsong College students we've spoken with, are giving what little they have for the treatment.
And how are you feeling? Do you feel like it was moving anything? Did you just, you know, you enjoy just being sort of clean and sober?
Well, that's it. Your body responds well to being clean and sober. And, you know, I'm outdoors in the bush, clean air and all that kind of stuff. There's physical kind of activity to do. I like exercise when I'm feeling healthy. So I was doing that. So, you know, I'm feeling better within myself anyway. They did have a real psychologist that would come as well, like once every week or two. So like that was something. So I was bouncing back fairly strongly and I was able to show a genuine interest in the Bible and in the Hillsong stuff. Cause like I did have my anthropologist hat on and I had nothing but time the majority of the day and nothing else to read or do. Plus you show interest in anything Hillsong or biblically related, you get perks.
So you're being rewarded.
Oh yeah. The more interest you showed in the biblical stuff and Bible groups and things like that, the more opportunities you got. Such as when the Hillsong conference came to Sydney, we were asked if we would like to go, and told if we would like to go volunteer on the motorcade to go wash cars all day. And we're like, yeah. So that's kind of what we were doing from like, I don't know, 7 a.m. till 4 or 5 p.m. Close to when the evening session began, and we got to sit in on that. And look, at the same time, I say that, but I kind of was thankful for it because I think by that stage I'd been there 4 or 5 months, maybe even to my 6 month. And you want to not be there as much as possible. Even if you're like washing cars, at least you're in a different environment washing cars with different people.
It's like work release.
Yeah, exactly, work release. So at least it's somewhere else. So it's a quantum of freedom.
I'm sure they probably know that too.
Yeah. So there's that added, you know, they didn't have to ask twice anyway.
Right.
So yeah, we went and then about, I think it was midday, 1 o'clock or something like that. And this nice silver white Audi kind of pulls up and you have to say special care of this one, boys. This one's Brian's car. And I'm like, okay.
We touched on this in the documentary, how Hillsong exploits the energy and ambition of young volunteers and college students to clean stadiums after conferences and scrub toilets. But being the recipient of free labor from mentally unwell rehab patients just feels, even by Hillsong standards, so wrong.
What do you think the goal is?
Well, it was referred to as Christian-based rehab. It's not. It's a Hillsong indoctrination camp with a mild interest in rehabilitation. Like, the rehabilitation stops after 6 weeks.
When that 6 weeks is done, what is the rest?
Like, that's all indoctrination. That's it. And babysitting.
And how long were you in it?
I was there 6 months.
What was there that forced you out?
I'd kind of bottled up what I was feeling for a little while. You know, there's some vulnerable people in there with all kinds of things, schizophrenia, borderline personality, or maybe drug-induced psychosis. Only just recently had just got over this kind of stuff. And, you know, maybe a student who's just come in that day and this community member has come over to them thinking that they're a professional and starts telling them about a psychosis dream or something like that. Mm. And this student starts talking to them saying, well, maybe it was a sign from God rather than, it was just part of psychosis. Don't worry about it. You know, you'll start getting better.
Right.
It was something like that where I was like, that's it for me here. It was unspeakable.
When you left, did you have to announce it to them?
No, it was quite sudden. My heart was, I was well and truly over Hillsong at this stage and I couldn't get behind it. I was having arguments with people that would come in. And so you get kind of like monthly leave. And I was on the train to Central Sydney, which takes a good hour and a half or more. And while I was on that train trip, I was like, you know what? I'm not going back. And I had a bit of a bender. I won't lie, but I needed to kind of exercise some demons, so to speak, I guess. So I had a bit of a bender for about a week or so, and I ended up in a different psychiatric institution for about 3 weeks after that. But it was a professional, like, private institution in Sydney. It was a decompression period to get over the past 6 months. So I had deconditioned to what was normal reality. I'm in a really good place at the moment. I'm working, I'm studying occupational therapy at the moment. I'm hoping to work in mental health myself.
That's great.
Yeah. I may have the opportunity to warn someone away from going to 180TC.
Is there Hillsong branding within the facility?
No, it's not like 180TC presented by Hillsong or anything like that. But I mean, that's where all of them.
But you were going to, you knew there was no hiding.
Oh, yeah, there was Hillsong no hiding. That's where it all went. Yeah, that's where they were taking us. You just have a look at their Instagram feed or anything or Facebook. It's just all there.
Right. After this call with Jacob, I pulled up 180TC's Instagram. If Hillsong was ever present on their page, it doesn't seem to be now. No location tags, no hashtags, no Hillsong logos, as if keeping the association with Hillsong secret for some reason. It's a troubling example of how far Hillsong's tentacles reach and how invisible they can be. But a movement of transparency and accountability is now happening around Hillsong, with former lead pastors of major Hillsong branches stepping down amidst demands for change. To find out if real transparency, real change, is actually happening at Hillsong, I decided to look at one of their most vulnerable, yet most existentially vital arms, Hillsong College. So I am walking up to the college temporary campus with big Hillsong insignia. Looks like an Apple store, but for Jesus. Here's an older person, looks like a pastor. Definitely a pastor. They're walking towards me.